Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Joining us now is Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, always love Wednesdays at noon when we get to chat with you. Best time of the week. So we heard from Jordan Schultz of The Score that it was a successful meeting between DeAndre Hopkins and the Tennessee Titans. And then we heard from Tom Pelissero on NFL Network that the Titans didn't have a contract and they didn't talk negotiations. Your reaction to that, and is that not a little bit odd?
Well, I can't help but think that they, as far as I know, they haven't done anything contractually with their other players. So they don't have a ton of money to work with. And I mean, it's also a gamble, but it's one that's worth taking if you're the Tennessee Titans to bring him in. Correct me if I'm wrong. There are three teams that we know about to this point, the Titans, the Packers, and the Patriots. If something else is out there this morning, I've missed it, but it's not the teams that were being mentioned during the trade discussion. It's not Buffalo yet. It's not Kansas City yet. Those teams don't have a lot of cap room either. And I think the majority of the league right now is looking to see what type of offers he will mull over. And to this point, I don't know if he has any. And, you know, Belichick was coy whenever things were going over the weekend and into Monday with him in town here. I think everyone's looking at a cap situation and wondering, what does DeAndre Hopkins want? Is he looking to win? Money is money, right? But if all things are equal, what does D-Hop want to do? And my guess is, along with production, he wants to win. And my assumption, based on the list of teams that we know he's visiting, with a quick stop in Green Bay, a quick stop to me as a report means he's not going to get an offer there. It's just like, hey, let's just discuss where you are and that we're interested. And same with New England. I have a hard time thinking he's going to get Odell Beckham Jr. money, because there was a demand from Lamar Jackson, and Baltimore knew how much it was going to help their offense to have Odell Beckham Jr. there, where it's a one-year $15 million deal. And if they're not good and Lamar's hurt again, they'll trade Odell at the trade deadline and get draft picks in return for the $15 million they're going to ultimately spend the majority of. Again, that's worst-case scenario in how I view it. I don't know if Hopkins is in that same criteria based on whatever contract he's looking for and the decision the Titans would have to make on kicking the can down the road, as I like to put it, on either Tannehill or Harold Landry. And both of those are tough decisions on a restructure, because one guy you don't foresee as the future at quarterback. You've got that guy that you drafted in the second round, and you have another guy who you just gave a boatload of guaranteed money to a year ago, who's coming off an ACL that didn't play at all last year, and you don't want to give more money up front to restructure that deal. So I think they're in a tough spot unless the entire league views Hopkins the same way the Titans, Packers, and Patriots ultimately could, which is, let's just see if the market comes back down to us with a guy that can come in and help us.
And I do think that might be part of the reason why the Titans don't have or didn't have an offer on the table, is, hey, let's just see what everybody else values him at. We don't want to set the market. And you're right. It's about what D-Hop wants. It's about money. It's about, you know, how competitive the team is going to be this season. It's about the way that he's going to be used in that offense. But I do think it comes down to, what do the Titans want? How do the Titans value him? What would you be willing to pay DeAndre Hopkins if you were the Titans?
Well, I think The fact that the Titans are bringing him in and hosted him the way they did, they're recruiting him on the fact of how he's going to be used in their offense and the familiarity that he has, not just with Mike Vrabel, but with Tim Kelly from Houston. I think that matters. It's puzzling to me that he was as disgruntled as he was, and that Watson was in Houston with Bill O'Brien, that Bill O'Brien's now the OC in New England and he's visiting there. And he's, you know, a quick stop in Green Bay is the report. Again, I'm looking at the visits. I think the Titans use him as in the grand scheme, best case scenario, Treylon Burks is the number one receiver. And DeAndre Hopkins is a very solid number two. And if you get more out of that, great. If you don't, you brought him in to be a number two and you pay him like that. You ask the money. I'm not going near $10 million. There may be a team that does. I'm going 6 to 8. I'm trying to go bargains, 8.5, and throw some incentives in there. But here's the key to the offer. It's how do the Titans how will the Titans offensively treat him within this offense? If you look at Jonnu Smith's numbers in 2020 and compare just the numbers, catches and yards, to Austin Hooper, they're very similar to Austin Hooper last year and Jonnu Smith in 2020. Jonnu Smith, though, scored 8 touchdowns. They actually treated him as a threat in the red zone. DeAndre Hopkins can score. He has made some acrobatic catches, one-handed, back of the end zone. He's done it against the Titans a number of times. Are they going to treat him like a true weapon? Because they don't have many of those dudes that have scored touchdowns in the National Football League offensively at wide receiver. They just don't. They don't at tight end. So they need those guys. And if Kelly is going to use Hopkins, again, different position, the way Arthur Smith used Jonnu Smith, I'm more intrigued about that impact on the scoreboard than I am having 11 guys and only 2 guys are actually have a threat to get across the goal line.
Yeah, that could be a possibility. He becomes more of a red zone threat in your mind than anything, because Jonathan, before you got on, how would they use him in his offense? And do you believe? I think if you go out, listen, if you go out and get him, fine. You know, yep. But you got to know exactly what you're getting. You got to be able to get him at the price that you want him. I don't know what that price is. I really don't, because I've always said.
Listen, Mace, guys, can I flip it on you real quick?
Yep.
Go ahead. You're a great example of kind of the hype behind Hopkins. Not what you're saying. I don't know where you stand on this line, but I'm saying what you did in your career. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to know, and why I'm treating this as a number 2 wide receiver visit. I want to treat him as a number 1 when he's in town, you know. Mm-hmm. But whenever he's on the roster, Treylon Burks has got to be my number 1. Mm-hmm. Because players that there have been 23 players total have had more than 4,000 yards receiving after they turned 31 years old. Mm-hmm. You are one of them. And I don't think people realize how difficult, how hard that is to pull off. And it's not like you instantly get a guy at 31 and it just magically happens for an offense that doesn't have a lot of depth at the position. They're very young at the number 1 spot. There's a different role, and you don't have to be a number 1 guy to put up those types of numbers. You just have to be, number 1, available and consistent. And Hopkins was not available for the first 6 games of last season and consistently was in and out based on whichever quarterback was playing. But can you explain how hard it is to just get the same type of production that's expected once you reach your 30s at the wide receiver position based on just the league itself and how great every position is capable of being?
It's very difficult because your role in an offense changes, you know, as you start to put up years in the NFL. Now, there's going to be a period where if you are a good player, it's between the age of 24 and 28, where you see the guys, that's where their numbers are. They build up those numbers. Now, some guys may hit it before they're 23. You know, some guys may hit it when they're 21 and 22 and then sort of go up to that 28, 29 range. But there's a period, like a 4 or 5 year period, where these guys have tremendous seasons. And then after that, because of how the team views them now, they start to slow down. And the offense starts to go away from you, in a sense. So it's harder it was easier for me to pick up those numbers when I was 24, 25, 26, 27, 28. But once I turn 29, 30, 31, it's harder because the targets are different, because the team views you different. The team doesn't necessarily view you as a number one guy, even though you may give them number one production in games throughout the season. They still don't view you as the number one guy. They view the younger guy who has the potential as the number one. You are the number two. You are the de facto. And if he can't get it done from the number one standpoint, then they look to you at times to be in the number one. But a lot of times it doesn't happen, so it's harder for you to accumulate those numbers when you pass the age 29, 30, because teams just view you totally different.
Right there with you, man. And look, I understand the rush to be like, man, he's really going to help this offense. I agree with that. As long as they treat him in the role that I believe the offense is capable of producing, that's fine. But if Burks goes down and, you know, you've got other factors, for instance, you can't protect the quarterback, this isn't going to be a booming situation by bringing him in.
You treat him like Kansas City treated Juju Smith-Schuster. He was just an extension of their tight ends. He caught all the mucky stuff in the middle. He caught all the short stuff, got up the field. You opened up. You ran him on routes that was going to get him open. And what I mean by that is you let everybody else clear it out, and you hook up at about 5 yards. You catch the ball and get upfield. You may get 2. You may get 10. Hell, you just may get the first down. That's it.
Yep.
That's how you got to treat and use, I think, a D-hop at this juncture of his career, which – goes back to what I was saying earlier, it doesn't make you a faster team. Vrabel has been telling us he wants to get faster. D-Hop doesn't make you faster. He gives you more catches and the ability in the red zone, but he doesn't make you a faster team. And what if Treylon Burks goes down? Now you're back in the same situation you were in, you know, a year ago. Now you don't have the speed to get down the field. There's a reason why they were trying to throw Racy McMath in there last year. And what was that reason? The speed. They had no speed to get downfield.
They also had no other receivers.
Well, but if they had receivers that can get downfield beside Racy McMath, they would have threw them out there. Racy was more because he has that potential of getting down the field. He can be your long ball guy. If Treylon goes down, where do they go after that?
Well, you could make the same case about any other player on this team. Right. Tannehill goes down, then where are you?
I mean, they got Will Levis.
Jesus, take the wheel. And there we go. More with Jonathan Hutton coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow is with us now.
Okay, Hutt, I want to ask you about a couple other things to throw a couple of change-ups in here off of the Hopkins thing here. But we're going to hear from Ryan Tannehill, I think, a little bit later this hour. We're going to play it here on the show. I'm really curious about something that just in all of this Will Levis and now with Hopkins and what are we doing here, we haven't talked a whole lot about the fact that he had ankle surgery, right? He is coming off of a season where he really toughed it out. Like, he was playing through a very difficult injury to heal from, the high ankle sprain. I thought he did a pretty good job of just trying to manage. And then, of course, he injured it again, and we know what happened after that. So I'm looking ahead to what we're going to see from him. I'm really curious to see if he can get that ability to do what he does so well, and that is run effectively and smartly. What do you think about all that?
It's a great question because I immediately think of the offensive line and how they didn't help him a year ago. And I gained a lot of respect for him. I've already had some, but more based on the way he battled through and continued to lead despite being, you know, playing on one foot based on how he was getting just knocked around. That's first and foremost. I view him behind a good offensive line, good, not great, good offensive line, as the efficient quarterback that is a run-based offense where he's able to step up in the pocket and move the chains. They're able to stay on the field for time of possession, able to maneuver an offense that scores more than 17 points per game, you know, down the stretch. I just shake my head at the lineup last year where he was just getting rattled back and forth. That's number one. But there are a lot of players coming off injury. And Tannehill on the ankle, to me, Willie, is intriguing for the mobility factor. You know, and as long as he's able to get out of the pocket and maneuver some things and give receivers more time, because Mace has touched on it, it's not the fastest group. Give receivers more time within the patterns to break open or to fall open. That's going to help Tim Kelly immensely, but it starts up front and really starts at left tackle with Dillard.
Tim Kelly, as he continues to lay this out, I'm also wondering too about something that Derek has brought up a lot in the context of Hopkins, and that is you want to get faster, you want to get quicker. So tell me where you see that How much different do you think the offense will look, given the fact that, you know, there's still Derrick Henry, there's still the foundation of what they've been doing for so long? How much different do you think the offense will actually look when we start to see it?
Well, I think it could be just some formations, more too tight with two tight ends with the ability to actually pose a threat in the passing game, more play action off of whatever Henry's doing, and that can be early in downs as well. And again, I think it comes down to, are they bringing in Hopkins? If he's coming in, is he a better version than what we expected of Robert Woods a year ago, who just never, well, he's brought in to be a number two behind Burks, and we just never saw that. They've got to get more production on the short passing game, the short to intermediate passing game. The deep yards, I'm not expecting on a routine basis like we saw with Corey Davis and A.J. Brown and Jonnu. I don't think it's that explosive, but it can be a lot better. And it starts with the development and the chemistry between the quarterback of the number one, which is Burks, but also just how quickly Tannehill gravitates to Kelly's offense and in trying to figure out what's coming next. And I thought he and Art had a great rapport when it came to that. They need to get back to that with the OC and the quarterback. And I just never felt like that meshed over the last couple of years. That really hamstrung them to where, even if it was a sack on first down, second and long, they weren't getting half of those yards back. There was no chance at that. They've got to get back to just producing yards down the field, not necessarily first downs, but gives them a chance on third down to pick up the chains. Last year, it was a foregone conclusion. It was 9 times out of 10, it felt like it was going to be a 3-and-out.
If they, let's just say, hypothetically, that DeAndre Hopkins goes to the Patriots, they offer him stupid money that he can't refuse, and he signs there. In your mind, are they rolling with what they have, or is it worth finding another veteran wide receiver to add to the mix? And who would that be? Derek gave his list earlier. We can give you candidates, but you might have one in mind. Tell me what you think. And if you're looking
at this
names.
Point, at this point, though, I would. It sucks because
is there anybody that moves the needle enough that it's even worth it?
Well, I mean, I think about the number two and number three guys around the league, that we possibly guys are looking to deal for in the preseason. But again, like the whole cutdown day for me is kind of just it's got me spinning because they're going to go from 91 all the way down to 53 at the end of August. So it's not like you have this gradual cut where you predict everyone's just going to be wide open. I think that's when, to me, financially, it benefits the team to really turn over some positions and bring some other guys in that can be a serviceable down and distance guy and get you some yards. That would be my role now as I foresee just the landscape of the position. Plus, the market's going to come back to where Tennessee is. So if someone's going to overpay for DeAndre Hopkins, everyone else is going to be in the group. And if Hopkins isn't going to demand the top dollar, no one else is that's going to be released because everyone's going to be just trying to latch on to a 53-man roster for week one. I think that benefits the Titans. It doesn't benefit the offense early on. It benefits the Titans to add depth that way, especially if you can get a number two or number three guy that has been consistently okay in other offenses similar to what Kelly's done.
Well, you're right, Hutt. They're going to have to get someone. If this thing doesn't work out with D-Hop and they're not able to bring him in and solidify a deal with him, then you try to figure out, well, where does this team go moving forward? Do you see them? Because, listen, the question has been asked of Vrabel and Tim Kelly about the receiving room. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be content with, if they can't make it happen with the big-name guy, then we're going to roll with the guys that we have in this room. But how does that make a Tennessee Titans offense look moving forward under a new offensive coordinator, under a revamped offensive line?
Not good. Mm. Not good. But I mean, they don't look, I don't think they look good now. And I'm not saying on the field, just I'm saying on the depth chart that they're going to get banged up. Teams get banged up at that position. Hamstrings happen. Different things happen. Concussions happen. So that depth is a concern, even if it's not a Hopkins-like name or a player that's coming in. That to me is imperative. They're going to have to roll with what they have. But, I mean, it's not like I see this team as a one-guy-away contender. But I do think they are a good receiver away, Mace, from being a win or a loss away on any particular Sunday. I think they're going to be in a lot of one-possession games. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just who they are. So whenever they've got the football down at Kansas City and they need a field goal to tie and a touchdown to win, who are they going to throw to? No one's going to step up and make that play right now if Burks is hurt. And so I've got to expect that they've got to get more guys in that can just go catch the football, that give you a chance to, you know, have another down and distance after a third down pass. That's why I'm down on the depth chart as it is. And they're going to say whatever, they're going to make whatever they can of the group. It's not good right now. And they know that. That's why they're bringing in Hopkins. And they're also telling us that the free agent crop that's out there, you know, they've had their chance to bring those guys in if they wanted to. Hopkins just actually presents something based on the fact that they have familiarity from Tim Kelly, and Kelly knows what type of player he is in the big moments. It's hard to find those guys.
Jonathan Hutton is with us. Hutton, last one for you. If you had to put a number or a ranking as to how good the Jacksonville Jaguars offense is going to be this season, where would you rank them?
I mean, I don't know. Are you saying, well, they're number one in the AFC South?
Yes, I feel like that's pretty safe. I'm saying in the NFL.
There are a lot of good offenses in the AFC, though, so it's tough. They're a playoff offense. They may not start a single rookie on their team this year. This is a team known for drafting a lot of rookies. they may not start a single rookie. They may start one at left tackle. The dude from Oklahoma is legit based on talk from Jacksonville. So Cam Robinson's there right now at left tackle, but the guy behind him, I can't remember his name, he's coming. So I think that's the one position to watch. But they are in a good spot. They've got guys coming back off of injury. They've added pieces through trades and through the draft for depth purposes. I like where they sit right now. And they could be one of those sneaky teams simply because they had the run at the end of the season that no one really felt like was legit. They were just in a bad division. And they had the big comeback over the Chargers in the playoffs. All that being said, they are in a position to make a move. They should make a move up the ladder. They should climb the ranks. So where they rank right now should not even look close to where they could be come October or November if they come out of the gate swinging, because they've been together for a while and they have the luxury of a young quarterback on a rookie contract who can spin it. And Peterson's in a great position in order to unleash some of the other offensive weapons they have around him now, including Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, I mean, I think Calvin Ridley is an underrated addition to this offense this season. Hutton, appreciate you as always. We will take it to Ryan Tannehill at the podium at St. Thomas Sports Park now.
Monday, did you get a chance to talk to him, lobby him a little bit?
Yeah, we were able to connect, spend a little time together. Had some great conversations, and we'll see what happens here as we move forward.
Relationship with him before Ryan was that kind of one of the first times you got to talk to him on an extended basis?
Yeah, I hadn't been able to meet him before, so I really enjoyed meeting him and his girlfriend and spending a little time together. And like I said, it was nice meeting him, and I think he'd be a good fit here, but we'll see what happens moving forward.
Ryan, overall, how would you say the team, everybody has improved from the start of the offseason program to where you guys are now?
I've seen a lot of improvement, just coming out, like I said, last time I was up here, just new offense, working through a new terminology, new concepts, and everyone just getting on the same page with that. I've just seen a lot of growth. We were able to work through some of those early mistakes, early miscommunications, and just being on the same page. And you've just seen those mistakes decrease as time has gone on here. So really, really happy with the way our guys have worked. Seen a lot of progress out of our younger guys and some of the veteran guys as well. So, really proud of the way we came out, worked with a purpose throughout this spring, and feel like we got a lot better.
What do you do now specifically, and then what's important maybe for other guys to do to make sure you're ready for camp?
A lot goes into it. I think you got to get yourself mentally, physically, emotionally ready to go for, I don't even know how many weeks it is now from training camp through the Super Bowl. So, a lot goes into that physically, being at your strongest, your most well-conditioned, being position-specific, heading into training camp. That way you're not playing catch-up in the early part of training camp. mentally, being on top of this new offense and new terms and the calls and everything that goes along with that. And then you also have to take a little time to make sure you're emotionally ready to handle the length of the season, you know. So taking some time away, recharging your batteries and coming in with a focus and an energy and ready to attack the season.
How much have you enjoyed just being here every day through all of this, and how important was that, not only for yourself but for everybody else as well?
That was great. Like I said, we did a lot of good things throughout this spring, and especially with this new offense, being able to just stack those reps up with each individual player. You know, we had great attendance throughout, you know, this spring from every position. So, you know, stacking that rep count, you know, up and up as the spring went on, being able to see multiple looks against these plays, everyone talk through it afterwards, watch the tape together, you know, see where we can grow and get better, and just to see the progression from day one in late May until, you know, now, you know, a month later, has been a lot of fun. You know, we have to build on it as we move forward.
I know it's different guy to guy. Can you remember what it was like for you when you were starting out in the league in terms of developing your touch and getting to a point where you felt like you knew how to fit balls in and match kind of the arc and the pace with the route and all of that?
Yeah, it just kind of comes with time. You know, you develop different aspects of your game and being able to make different throws, different windows call for different throws, different plays, different concepts call for different throws. And, you know, for me, it was just going through that process and learning that not every throw has to be a ripped ball. You know, sometimes it's best to put a little touch on it, let your receiver run through it, make a soft catch and accelerate through it and go. So it's definitely a learning process, and, you know, everyone goes about that a little bit differently.
You guys today and just those throws against air to the receivers and one day last week seemed to have some trouble, especially early on, kind of timing them up. Is that harder than it looks, and what are you working on there exactly collectively?
Yeah, I think just getting on the same page. You know, it's not something we don't do a lot of, you know, especially first balls to a moving, you know, receiver, you know, running a go ball. It doesn't really always come out perfectly, you know, but you know, we had some read route, a version of a read route where the angle is going to be dependent on the coverage. One of them, I didn't do a good job of explaining the full look to Chris, just being on the same page there. But we're growing through that. You know, I think those got better as we got a little settled in there after the first couple on the go balls, and you know, we're seeing some good balls and some good catches.
So much turnover on the offensive line. How important has it been to have the continuity that you guys had all through OTAs?
Oh, it's huge. You know, like I've said several times, just being able to all get on the same page, be confident in the terminology that we're using and not be thinking, you know, decoding at the line of scrimmage, right? When they hear the play in the huddle, we need to break the huddle and go to the line confidently, all knowing exactly, you know, what's expected of us, and we're not trying to figure out what's going on as we take the line of scrimmage.
Is that group a little more settled than you expected it to be through OTAs? I mean, with the lack of movement?
I don't know if I expected anything. I expected our guys to come out and work, and, you know, we'll see as we go into training camp. There's going to be competition across the board. We'll come out here, we'll compete each and every day, and at the end of it all, you know, hopefully we gel together as a unit, and that group's playing, you know, as one.
On that note, you said he spent some time, obviously, with you guys in the film room, too. Like, how do you feel like he's come about and just that leadership role, too, that he's taking on?
Yeah, Aaron's done a great job. You mentioned, you know, coming into the QB meetings at 7 early in the morning, getting that extra time, making sure we're on the same page with the run game, with the mic points, with the pass game and the checks, and being able to then take that message into the O-line room and be the leader, the voice of that room. So really thankful for his work and proud of his work throughout this spring. The time he put in, obviously, he's a talented guy and moves really well. But to see him wanting to take the next step and then doing it on a daily basis has been a lot of fun for me.
How has the experience been working with Charles London, and what are some of the ways you feel like he may have challenged you guys as a QB1?
Yeah, Charles has been great. You know, I think he does a good job of letting us know what's expected of us each and every day, you know, prepping us for the practice, for what's going in, you know, getting everything consolidated to where we're on the same page and we know, you know, what's expected of us as we go out here. And then just holding us to that standard each and every day, you know, has some good drills he puts us through, is able to see things the same way as Tim see it, which I think is huge. You know, when you have continuity in the way things are seen across the offense from coach to coach, coach to player, It makes things a lot more clear and lets the standard be clear for everybody, players and coaches included.
Ryan, sometimes you see an offense or a team install a new offense in an offseason, and then you get to the season, there's kind of like some growing pains, a learning curve, as guys are getting more used to that and things are coming together. Are you guys cognizant of that? Is there anything you guys are in particular doing besides just really hitting it aggressively, trying to get it down now to combat coming in a little bit slow with the new offense?
Yeah, we're trying to attack each and every day. You know, I think I mentioned it last time I was up here is, yeah, it's a learning process of all getting on the same page, terminology-wise, concept-wise, especially when you have choice routes and everything like that as a part of the offense. So being able to take advantage of these reps throughout the spring. Now when we get into training camp, take advantage of those reps during training camp, and that way we can hit the ground running once we're playing for real.
What are we talking about, Colton Dowell, Ryan? Colton Dowell out there. What have you seen from him, and is there anything like specifically that you've seen him progress in from day one up until now?
Yeah, Colton's done some good things. You know, seeing him grow as a lot of the rookies have. You know, coming in, learning a new offense, trying to figure everything out, not just the new offense, but the NFL in general. And you know, rookies have the worst schedule by far of anyone in the building besides the coaching staff. You know, they're here early, they stay late. You know, they're here for another 2 weeks right after this, you know, so, you know, your rookie year is a long year. You're taking in a lot of information on the field stuff, off the field stuff, and everything in between, navigating, setting boundaries. Like there's a lot that goes into it, right? So, being able to navigate all those things, but, as a rookie class, seeing the guys that we have, drafted guys and undrafted guys come in, they're working hard. We're all getting on the same page, seeing the extra time that they're putting in the afternoons come, and pay off. On the practice field has been a lot of fun, and Colton's included in that.
What's the offseason been like, and what changes or progress have you seen in his game this offseason from last year?
Yeah, Malik's grown a lot. You know, he put a lot of work in throughout the offseason. You know, was able to throw with him a few times in the offseason before we started out here, and you know, saw his growth, saw him pushing himself, and he's only continued that as we got out here and played, you know, full football in OTA. So. Proud of him and the work he's put in, and it's fun to see a guy grow and his hard work pay off.
One or two ways, and then when you talk about growing, any one or two ways that you can kind of
playing quarterback, you know, I think you're seeing everything that you want to see when you're looking at a quarterback, a guy, you know, in command of the offense. He's throwing the ball accurately. He's playing fast. When you do those things, you give yourself a chance and ultimately play good football.
Did you guys throw in Florida? Maybe how did all that come about?
Malik?
Yeah.
We threw here. I stayed here this offseason, so, you know, I was able to connect with him and throw a little bit here locally.
Nationally, a lot of guys have written this team off already. In your mind, does this AFC South still run through this building?
Every year is different, right? Every year is different. I'll say we have a lot of confidence in ourselves and our ability to go out and compete and ultimately win games. You know, that's why we're out here every day. That's why we are here voluntarily throughout the spring. We're going to push ourselves throughout this summer and come out and expect to win games on Sundays. You know, that's the only reason we're here, only reason we put everything we put into it, mentally, physically, emotionally, is to go out and win games on Sunday. So there's a lot of confidence in that locker room, and we have to keep pushing that throughout the fall and the training camp.
Photo of you on social media with a pilot training certificate or something. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was able to get my pilot's license. You know, something that spent a lot of time and a lot of effort to do. It's a lot of fun. It's a little escape for me. Something I have to be totally focused on and in the moment, be present in the moment. But at the same time, it's an escape for me. So, yeah, it was a lot of hard work went into it. But thankful I was able to get that and excited to be a pilot now.
After this?
I will not be flying myself home. I'll be flying Southwest, so hopefully I can get a free flight or something for saying that.
Have you had any teammates? Have volunteered to be a passenger with being the pilot, or how's that yeah. kind of gone? So
yeah, there's a lot of guys that are curious. You know, we'll see if they actually yeah. But we'll see when it comes time to take them up if they're actually going to go. Do what?
Maybe Traylon, since he's had his own experience.
Yeah, I asked Traylon, and I said, hey, you know, you've been on a small plane. You ready to go again? He's like, I think it was a one-time thing for me. So I don't know if it's going to be Traylon or not.
So it's allowed under your contract, though? It's not an issue?
Yeah, I haven't had any issue. You know, Vrabel's been supportive of it and been in communication with him about it. So, you know, he was trying to get me to go even a step up. So I said, that's a little bit out of my league right now. I'll stick to where I'm at.
Is your wife supportive of that, too?
Yeah, my wife's supportive. She was really excited to go. You know, I was able to take my family up the day after I passed my exam. So that was a lot of fun. Kids were really excited. And, you know, I was a little nervous for taking my family up for the first time. You know, it's like there's this growing process throughout the flight training where at first you're nervous, right? You're coming in and you're trying to do everything perfectly. And, you know, as you get more comfortable, then those nerves go away a little bit, right? You're still, you know, making sure you're on top of everything, but, you know, you're not quite as on edge coming in to land. And had the family in there for the first time, and I felt like I reverted back and got a little nervous, you know, with my whole family on board. But I was able to, you know, execute the landing and everything. And the next morning, my daughter and son were like, "Daddy, can we go back on the plane again?" You know, so they loved it, and you know, glad to be able to share those experiences and really create family memories together, you know, through that. Thank you, guys.
All right, we'll have Mike Vrabel at the podium coming up next. Caroline Lee D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Teresa.
Mike, this is the last week of OTAs. Did some of the veterans maybe, you know, I'm thinking Derek and maybe Traylon, were they,
what, Teresa? I have no idea where they're at. No. I mean, that they chose not to come to voluntary. There you go. You want to try again, Teresa?
Sure.
You're in mid-season form.
Hey, what can I say? It's Wednesday. DeAndre Hopkins, how did that visit go? And are you at the point, do you stay in touch or you just let Ran and the front office guys handle that?
Well, we'll continue to kind of look through where we're at. As we add free agents and everything else, we follow up. And, you know, I don't think there's anything that's going to happen here today, I would imagine. But there's follow-up every time we come and have conversations, and we'll see where it goes.
On the field with the team, and
this is the last day, and the rookies will continue their program. We'll meet with them. It's good that we'll have a chance to meet with the rookies tomorrow. There's some just really cool situations that came up today, as just the point of just going through the process of not having a script and changing situations and things that come up, penalties that may come up, defensive linemen jumping off sides on one side, wide receiver on the other side moving, explaining to them that, you know, only the receivers on that side are protected or reaching the ball at the goal line, free play on third and two, and somebody, you know, just cool situations that come up that we can teach from. So it'll be a good – I'm excited for that meeting tomorrow morning with the rookies.
At a period where you had a couple balls batted and picked and things like that, can that sometimes be a better learning tool in a practice session maybe than when things do go right?
Well, I mean, I just think that it shows you is that it's going to take all 11 – you know, to be able to protect. And sometimes when, you know, you're trying to throw those timing routes on third and seven, that, you know, you got to be in the right spot. Again, ball can't get tipped or protection's got to be there. And, you know, when you throw the ball down the field, like we've got to make sure that as a receiver, like it's us or nobody. And so that's another situation that's going to get shown tomorrow morning with those rookies. Like it's your responsibility to make sure that ball is not intercepted when we take a shot down the field.
What do you want players to do now until you start?
Probably the most critical 5 weeks of the season. Just in my experience as a player and a coach, like what you do away from here, you know, when things aren't planned or structured, you know, are you able to get into a routine? So what I want them to do is go prepare for a long season. A long, grueling season of professional football. That's what I want them to do. And so we tried to give them drills. We extended individual time today so that the coaches could review those drills that they can do, you know, with their trainer or on their own or whatever they're doing, giving them some ideas. And then obviously I'm sure whoever they're working out with will have some ideas, and then the player will have some ideas. So that's what I want them to do, but it's the most critical 5 weeks of the season.
You guys have gotten better, especially like with this being the last day. You go back to the first day, mm-hmm. You forward it to here.
How do you think that's just the culmination of the spring, right? You install and first, second, then you go to third, and then you work the red zone, you know, different parts of the red zone. So it was good to be able to see those situations change and the players and, you know, coaches coming in from the sideline, communicating, substitution. I thought the operation was good. You know, we got a lot of great work in. We were able to throw the football. The quarterbacks worked through a pocket and real application as opposed to just a bunch of 7-on-7. So I think our conditioning improved. I think our football conditioning improved. We strung 6 or 7 plays together, you know, out there today. So I thought it was a good way to end.
That time away maybe isn't where Christian Fulton has done some of his best work.
He talked to us today about kind of revising his off-season program and everything and understanding what you were saying about repeat offending. How do you feel like he's done in terms of his commitment to changing?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say that that's, you know, you stated when you started that the 5 weeks away was time that, you know, he hadn't done his best work. I didn't say that. Nobody else has said that. That's a, you know, personal opinion that I probably don't agree with. But it's, you know, I mean, we ask every player that you train the way that you're going to play. And when you play a skill position, you have to run. You have to go and open up, and you have to change direction. And it's not 5 yards. It's whenever you have to cut. So there's reactionary movements, D linemen. Like, there's certain things that are going to be in the job description. And we ask every player. That's why we do the drills that we do. That's why we practice the way that we practice, because we want to practice the same way that we're going to play and to finish and to try to go get an extra block and protect the guy with the ball and all those things that we think help us win. So that's the most important thing, is that you're thinking in a manner that you're going to train the way you're going to play.
What makes you, do you feel good about where Christian is in kind of his adjusted approach?
I mean, I think that'll all be determined by how training camp goes and how he performs on the field.
Your lack of movement on the offensive line as far as his bodies, a good indication that they're progressing the way you would have hoped, that you were able to stick with that group?
I thought that group continued to improve, you know, throughout from the beginning of OTAs and phase two, and you know, some much better performances today out on the practice field than there were, you know, last week. And you know, that's all you ask for, is that guys continue to improve, work on the techniques, and then translate it to the field.
Malik said he's improved at letting it rip and kind of getting his body in time with his brain, something you said a lot, talked a lot about this time last year. How have you seen him grow in that area?
I thought he continued to get better. I thought just his attitude, his demeanor, you know, making little coaching points with them and seeing that immediately translate. Him understand, you know, the reason for saying that, you know, today was something cool that came up. You know, I moved the ball to the 35-yard line and said it was 3rd and 7. And it was Malik, and we converted. But following back up on him, I was like, hey, what was the situation? And it didn't dawn on him that we were kind of right on that fringe field goal, 3rd and 7, you know, not trying to lose any yards, could potentially go for it on 4th down based on the wind and whether we feel like we can kick and make a field goal from that distance. And, you know, long story short, we converted. But eventually it's going to have to be, all those things are going to have to trigger in a quarterback's mind, you know, pretty quickly as the ball's being set and guys are getting into the huddle and the call's coming in. You know, they have to, you know, the quarterback has to think like, you know, I would, and saying, you know, even if I – take care of the football and I gain a couple yards and don't lose any, we can kick a field goal or put coach in position to, you know, to potentially go for it. So those are great learning opportunities, and he, you know, very receptive to all those.
Coach, when it comes to these free agents that you did bring in, like Azeez and Sean Murphy Bunton and Arden Key, like to be possibly starters, how do you feel like they've gelled with this group? Because from an outsider's perspective, it seems like they fit.
They are great, you know, and that's what you try to target in free agency, Kaylee. You just, it's tough, you know, to not know some of these guys and have some personal knowledge and experiences and a relationship with them. And felt great about everybody that's come in and, you know, worked and been a part of the team and just let their personality shine, and, you know, Azeez, you know, leading and Arden with his energy and, you know, all those things, that guys coming in, and, you know, that's how you form a team. But, you know, it's, you know, you got to be careful when, you know, when you do that and you bring a bunch of guys in, they got to be the right guys.
Mike, you talked before about how much you enjoy being hands-on with guys and teaching fundamentals and things like that. When you played, you only played a handful of positions, but it seems like you're really into the fundamentals at 22 or 53 spots, however you want to phrase it. Where did your love of learning that and working in that way with guys start?
I think it's just, for me, it was I need a way to reach a play. You know what I mean? That is a connection, right? So for me, You know, you try to make a connection off the field, whether about their family or what they're interested in, or you know, their charitable endeavors. But on the field, you know, for me to get around and have a connection with a guy, I've got to know and have knowledge, right? So maybe it was, you know, when Tyler, when my son started playing O-line, you know, in the 10th grade, is okay, figuring out what that's supposed to look like. And but I've always felt like as a player, if you know what the guy across from you is doing and what his job is, maybe you can be better at your job. If I know how a tight end's supposed to block or what they're teaching him to do on blocking, then as an outside linebacker, I should be able to know that and understand that and try to use that to my advantage. If I know how they're trying to set routes up and, you know, stem and attack leverage and, you know, then beat me across, whatever it may be, then I can try to use that to help me do my job. And that was always, you know, they're all mirrored positions, right? You know, I mean, there's a running back that's across from a linebacker. And so I thought that was always something I tried to do as a player, and I, you know, just carried it over to this.
Thomas Odokoya since he got here last year.
I mean, we've, you know, talked about it yesterday as a staff, and you know, had a really nice play Monday, you know, in the red zone using his length. He's physically gotten stronger, moving better, understands the game better. I mean, just a fantastic addition to our team. He's just an unbelievable teammate. Love having him around. Love having him in the building. So it's been really cool to see him improve, you know, and see where he can and try to find a role on our football team. But certainly one of the more improved players, Jimmy, on our football team.
Bill had a couple turnovers today, but how would you gauge his growth and development during OTAs, and what do you want him to focus on the next couple of weeks?
Well, I mean, he's improved. He's gotten better. I mean, there's a lot of good things. You know, understanding when the journey's over, you know, making sure that we're, you know, moving out of the pocket and trying to keep plays alive, and but also making sure that it, you know, that the result isn't a negative one. You know, it's one thing when defenses make plays; it's another when, you know, we're reckless with the football, and so there's sometimes a difference. But I feel like just him in and out of the huddle, or the things that we made adjustments on in the red zone, I saw that get cleaned up here today. So I think it's just a daily improvement, a daily approach, especially with young quarterbacks.
We're talking down a little bit just about how much studying that he does and how he approaches that. Have you seen a difference in him from the beginning until now?
Yeah, Colton's gotten better. And I think once you learn, and there's a comfort level, we've talked about this, that you know, you look at a guy like KB, there's a lot of comfort level. And so he doesn't use a whole lot of energy or anxiety before the ball snap. It's his kind of calm demeanor, and so then whatever energy he wants to exert, he can do it once the ball snap. Sometimes when you're straining to know where to line up or what the play is or what your job, you know, what your responsibility is, that's taking half your energy away before you even, you know, go and play. So trying to get him comfortable, trying to have him learn multiple positions on the receiving end, whether it's outside, inside, F, C, so and that's gotten better.
Is that same for Skoronski, another guy that's been moving around different positions?
You know, Peter's probably just, I would say, further along in his football development, just having, you know, played in the Big Ten, played offensive line. You know, I think Colton is still, you know, smaller school, and I think that there's, you know, he's going to continue to develop, and I think that he'll do that. You know, I think Peter's, you know, and probably a little different for O-linemen. You know, probably just kind of banging around in there. I think the coverages kind of change a little bit for some of these younger receivers and the looks and, you know, some of the detailed coaching points.
You anticipate this field being ready?
Hmm?
Is the 25th report date or practice date, or is that not the right date?
25th is the report date.
Finalize anything with the Patriots? It still look like that's going to happen, or still?
That is going to happen. Yeah, that'll happen on our bye week.
Joint practices during your.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking about the other. Right before the third preseason game. So Wednesday, Thursday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because it's a Friday game. Tuesday, Wednesday. So we come, we leave Minnesota, come back here. We'll have a day, get him some rest. Patriots will come in, 2 days of work, and then day before, and then we'll play the game, I think, Friday at 7 o'clock. Good. Sorry, Jimmy.
Oh, you're good. Thank you.
All right, we will react to what Ryan Tannehill and Mike Vrabel had to say coming up next. Caroline Willie-DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.